Hello, everyone. Today is Saturday, April 24th, 2021. Welcome to our Contract Trust Conference Call. We're not accountants, tax professionals, lawyers, or currency dealers. We're not engaged in rendering legal, tax, accounting, or other professional advice. Should you require those services, you should retain competent advice from a professional in that field. Thanks for joining us today. My name, most of you know, is Carol Williams, and my associate, Jim Knox, and I have these calls every second and fourth Saturday of the month. These calls are recorded and available on our website, indicatorinformation.com, iqdcalls.com, and YouTube. As we get closer and closer to our expected RV, we thought this would be a good time to review our common law contract trust and why we think it is the best vehicle for you to protect your assets. We will devote most of this call to Q&A, and as always, we star six to raise your hand. And I have been negligent lately in telling everybody the name of the company. We are Indicator Information. I mentioned Jim Knox, the one and only original Jim. There are apparently somebody else out there selling trust whose name is Jim as well. Ours has been here for a long time, and there he is. Want to say good morning, Jim?
Well, good morning, Jim.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm a little late. I was on a call with one of our clients. Had some great questions, so I may bring those up later.
Okay, great. All right, well, let's get started here now that we're all here. And also, we're going to have to make this call no longer than an hour and a half. I have an appointment at 1:30, so we have to kind of keep it condensed today. Most of you are aware that we offer and encourage non-grantor, irrevocable, common law contract business trusts. And for the sake of simplicity, we refer to it as a contract trust. It is technically a business trust, but we have opted to drop the word business from the title as sometimes it causes confusion. If your trust does say business trust, it's okay. It's still very valid. Prudent estate planning compels you not to own anything. And we are all expecting something soon. So asset management, not ownership, is the best method available to reduce risk of loss. You can do this by utilizing the contract trust. No insurance at any cost confirms the protection that the contract trust can provide. It provides protection for you, your family, your goals and objectives. Unlike a revocable grantor trust, the contract trust is irrevocable. Irrevocable means no one can tell you to terminate the trust to pay someone else. So your assets are protected from anyone trying to get money from you personally. Irrevocable is also very helpful with the bank because the banks cannot touch your trust if it's irrevocable, nor can they touch it if it's non-interest bearing. So please bear those two words in mind, or two phrases. The most significant distinctions between revocable and irrevocable trusts are the estate tax considerations. Property placed in an irrevocable contract trust is no longer considered part of your estate, meaning that the property typically isn't included in your estate's value when it comes to determining if you owe death tax, and if so, how much. Yet the management of any trust lies with the trustee. One of the major benefits is that the contract trust contract allows you to be trustee of your own trust. That is a mouthful, isn't it? You retain full management control and benefit of the assets of the trust. There's no manager, protector, outside trustee, or anyone else telling you what you cannot do. There is really nobody between you and your money. And, you know, we've heard over the years, especially from people that are a little short on cash, I think I'll just go ahead and get a so-called skeleton trust from the bank and go from there. We strongly advise against that. The bank is not your friend. The trust they create for you will more than likely name them as the trustee, giving them the power to do whatever they deem appropriate and probably without your approval. They can do a lot of damage to your hand in the 30 to 90 days it may take you to get a proper trust created. Other people have asked, well, why should I establish a trust rather than continue owning the currency in my own name and Social Security number? Well, you know, owning anything in your own name and social leaves your assets exposed. If you were to exchange in your own name and then have an accident or heart attack on the way home, all that money would be at risk. the assets can be tied up in court for years and your family may not see any of it for a long time. Many have recommended that all your accounts be labeled as POD, or payable at death. That takes care of the probate issue, but it's still at risk of taxes and becomes public information. Having assets in your own name leaves you wide open for lawsuits and lovers wanting to part you with your newfound wealth. On the other hand, if you exchange into a properly crafted trust and then have an accident or heart attack, the assets remain in the trust with no probate or estate taxes. It will be managed by the successor trustees that you previously have named. Obviously, a properly crafted trust is a better alternative to either a skeleton trust or exchanging in your own name. While there are probably hundreds of other trusts out there, we feel our common law contract business trust provides you with the most flexibility and asset protection than any other. You know, I was recently asked about getting an EIN. Someone has said that getting an EIN for common law trust takes it out of common law and makes it a statutory trust. An EIN does not change the structure, basis, or validity of the trust. Getting an EIN is necessary if one wishes to open a bank account, so it's really a moot point. We provide all the legal backup you need, as well as membership to our exclusive website, IndicatorInformation.com. I recently received an email from someone who obviously purchased a trust from another provider, and I thought her questions were interesting, so I'm going to quote some of them here, read some of them here. I started filling out my documents in December when I first received them. Well, with our trust, you do not need to complete any sections of the trust. We do it all for you. All you have to do is sign it where it's indicated. Another question, I didn't realize I didn't make myself a trustee, so I nominated my son-in-law. Well, we make it very, very clear that you can be the trustee of your own trust, which is the biggest goal people want. You want to be in control of your own assets, and what better way to do it than to be the trustee of your own trust? Another question, do we need to notarize every section of the trust? Well, every page that needs to be notarized in our trust is clearly marked and tapped and complete. This person's also filled in many of the trust subtrusts with dates, but have not yet had them filled in. We do not offer subtrusts. We do not provide trusts that you have to download or create or fill in the blanks and print it yourself. Everything you get from us is 100% complete. This person also applied for an EIN with her brother as trustee. And we obtained the EIN for you, so you don't have to worry about the wrong person, the wrong kind of EIN number or anything like that. We do all that for you. And this question is, I don't even get this one. Should I add myself as a trustee, or do I substitute? And I'm in California. Well, like I said, I don't even really get that. But obviously, you want to be the trustee to start with. The trust is complete when you receive it. All that you need to do is sign in front of a notary. All signature lines are clearly marked. You do not need to download and print the trust. We send you the complete package, including the IRS EIN letter and access to our members-only website. And it's kind of short and sweet today, guys, because we are leaving it pretty much open for a Q&A. But, Jim, do you have anything on your mind you'd like to comment on today?
Yeah. What you were just talking about, I had a call from somebody, and that's what I was going over, is they got one from our competitors thinking it was us. That's happened numerous times. And they wanted me to get them an EI number because they had the trust, supposed trust, it's not really a trust, is using their Social Security number. They wanted me to get it thinking that we sold them the trust. No. You got the wrong folks. And so I had to school them a little bit on how they have to go about that and told them that basically I outlined all the failures that were obvious with the document they had versus what we have, and I told them there's nothing I can do to fix what you have. But I did tell them how and showed them how to get an EI number, but I don't know if they'll be able to do it. So we've had this problem how many times, Carol, like 8 or 9 times lately?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep, lately a lot.
Yeah, people call and says, well, you know, I can't get in the website. How do I get in your website? What's your name? I don't find it. What's your trust name? We don't find it. Well, but I listened to Jim on the phone.
Wrong Jim. Who's Jim?
It was the other company's Jim. I'm the original Jim.
You're right. The original one and only Jim Knox.
That's right. That's right. So we try and help them a lot. We work with them. Some of them come back, and actually after a little while with that company, actually did buy our trust. I think more than half of them did.
Yes.
Because they realized what they had just was not going to fill the bill. So just be careful, folks. You know, there's another company out there that's got a guy named Jim. And I don't know anything about their company. I don't know about their product. I've not seen their product. People have called me about their product. We're not going to, you know, we're not trying to diss another company. But we're just finding it interesting that there's two Jims and people get confused and buy their product thinking it's us. And it ain't. So.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get to some Q&A.
Okay, hopefully we can clear all that up. Okay, let's see. Mark, you are first today. How are you?
I'm doing well, Carol. How are you?
How you doing, Jim?
Good, thanks.
Okay.
I wanted to find out two things, one on topic, one slightly off. Why do you not want to get the stuff notarized at your bank?
I generally say that, and I say that rather strongly in my letter, because banks tend to be nosy. They want to know what you're signing, why you're signing. Are you sure you want to do this? Is this the right thing for you? All a notary really has to do, all they are doing is witnessing your signature and that you signed it of your free will. That's
exactly.
All. They don't need to ask anything else. So anyway, that's why I typically say don't go to a bank unless you know them. I mean, even when I'm in Oklahoma, I use my local bank there because I know them. But ordinarily, I wouldn't do that. So.
Oh, okay. So that one was simple. The other, like I said, a little topic, but it's on topic with everything that's going on. We're talking about, as we're getting closer to moving toward quantum and all of that stuff, about getting your money out of the bank and putting it into hard assets because of the fact that there's going to be a big deval prior to the reset of currency of up to maybe even 30%. Is it something that you guys feel is an activity and should be done, or do you think that between the FDIC, et cetera, that the money that's there is safe, and once it's over to quantum, one for one?
Oh boy.
Do you want to take that one?
Yeah, I'll try. I have a lot of conflict with that whole concept, Mark, and I'm glad you brought that up. Thank you. My opinion, and just my opinion, from the experience and the calls I've made and talking to a Wells Fargo banker a while back about this, which is one I've been working with for 4 years. He knows about the currency. He knows about all this stuff. And the only thing he says is, well, you know, if you do a non-interest-bearing account, we don't really have access to your money. We can't use it to make money. We can pledge it as collateral, but that's all we can do. And if you ever think about that, the only time that would come with a note was due on the collateral is if the bank fully imploded. As far as the quantum system, I'm anxious to get started with that. I'm just now getting educated and start moving into the crypto world, and I'm really jazzed about that. I'm not an advocate of it, I'm just saying I'm getting into it. And what I see happening is when we go to the quantum, you're going to actually have an electronic wallet. It's going to be a device that you can buy for $100-$150, and it's, you know, guaranteed to be secure, and it's where your money will be held. I think, it's just my opinion, I think the banks have become service companies, not banks. They're not going to be able to hold people's money anymore. Everybody will, as time goes on, will have their own little device, which is called an electric wallet or electronic wallet, and everything is in that. And you use that to load some money into the bank from time to time to use some of their banking services. But overall, they won't have access to your money. And as far as I'm not sure on this, Mark, but on the devaluation of the money because of this, because of that. But let me give a little idea of why it may happen. You know, every year they say, well, you know, there's about 3% inflation. Well, back in the 70s, I bought a car for $4,400. It was top-of-line car. That same car today is still manufactured, but, of course, an updated model. It's about $65,000. Now, taking consideration, the upgrades in the electronics can't be that much money. So we've had a devaluation of the dollar year over year over year to the point now where it's only worth a nickel or less of what it used to be worth when the Federal Reserve came into play in 1913. So if we get into a situation where they have to reestablish the value of the American dollar, it will affect everybody, and not just here in America, worldwide, because most people use the U.S. dollar. It will be short-lived. It'll be a little bit of an impact, but then at the same time, when we get a devaluation of the dollar and we get out of this and into the quantum financial system, the prices on everything will start dropping dramatically. So that 30% hit will initially be a shock, but in the medium range, say 2 years or less, you'll see the prices drop down to where that 30% really does not affect you. That's my opinion, folks, and I've been doing a lot of research, a lot of study, talking to a lot of people about this because I'm very, very concerned about this. Does that help, Mark?
Well, the thing that I was talking about in general, because I know that once quantum goes into effect and the world basically is still continuing to base everything on the U.S. dollar, what I'm talking about is prior to them actually implementing the reset and prior to them implementing quantum, what could possibly happen to your money if it is in banks or in public holdings? Is there a chance of loss of that money and lack of protection of that money?
Yes, and that is, they've done it overseas. Italy just grabbed everybody's money here, 2 years ago? Or it was Greece. Greece started grabbing everybody's money out of the accounts and used it to try and stay solvent. They failed. Took most everybody's money. Yes, that can happen. One of the things I have been looking into, and I have a lead, I haven't fully followed through on it, but there may be a way for us to buy an insurance policy on our money. And it's through, I think it's Lloyd's of London, which is expensive, but it's not risky. It's not as risky as some other insurance companies because they've been around a long time. But I don't know if you get the full value. You might be able to insure some of it. I wish I had the crystal ball that worked. I could tell you what to expect.
But then basically the FDIC means nothing.
Yeah, exactly. $250,000 on a million or 2 million or 3 million or 10 million, $100 million in your bank account, $250,000, what they're going to give you, that's a joke.
Yeah.
If you even get that much.
Yeah, and actually it's a bad joke. We've got to be ever vigilant about what we're doing with our assets. I'm going to be spreading my assets around quite a bit, financial assets. You know, the liquidity of my assets will be spread around. I'm not going to put it all in one spot. Initially, it'll all go into one spot, you know, that's how it has to work. But then I'll spread it around as fast as possible. And I will be using foreign countries and different entities. I'll be buying specific assets. For me, it'll be crypto, gold, silver, palladium, copper, a few other things. And most of those, like the gold and silver, I will take physical possession. That's my personal opinion. The copper, palladium, I probably won't take physical possession because I can't imagine them dropping off one ton of copper ingots at my house. But you never know. I might do that. But I think that's what we should do, Mark, is look at some of these different things. And, Mark, if you get some information and you want to give me a call, we can share it. We can, talk about this. Hold on a second. Excuse me. I had to cough. You could just give me a call and we can go over this more. And then we can get back to the group. And we can actually do a blast email if we find something really exciting to tell them.
Okay, because I'll do my research and you could do some, and I'll give you a call and we'll bang our heads together on this.
Yeah, I'm all for that. Sure. Then we'll spread the knowledge.
Yeah, because
that's what Jeremiah did. We just spread knowledge. That's all we can do. We have a product, but we spread knowledge.
Well, you would have thought that after almost 100 years, they would have put in stopgaps to prevent 29 from happening again, but it looks like that's going to happen before the reset.
Well, it could, but I think that the reset is on the very close horizon. And
yes.
The reason I say that, there was a specific airplane that landed in a specific place, and the person who got off the airplane went and talked to them, specific people about another specific person that shouldn't be where they're at, if you get my drift.
Yep,
read between the lines.
So, if that happens, which that airplane and that person landed in a specific place, I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday. There's a rumor, and I say it's rumor even though it's on the internet, and it's from a fairly reliable source, that James Comey has been arrested and taken to the islands.
Yes,
I heard that as well.
Club gift.
Yep, yep. That's an exclusive club you do not want to join.
That's right.
I'd love to go down and take some pictures, though.
Yeah. They've got
a
sign there.
Use a drone. Use a drone.
Yeah, that's right.
No, they'll shoot it down.
That's true.
Well, they got a sign that they change it from time to time on the front of Gitmo, and it's usually one of these fabric signs that hang up, and it'll say, the one I got a picture of that says, welcome to Gitmo, Hillary and friends. And I don't want to get into politics. We don't want to go down that road. But basically, I think that we're looking at the reset shortly. And I think that it's going to be, now that certain airplane landed in a certain place, I don't think it's going to be near as bad as what we were thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll be okay.
Before the end of the month.
Yeah, I think so. My gut feeling is before the end of this month.
Yeah. I also think that before the end of this month, and also because they want to make sure it's before that May 17th deadline.
Right, and not only that,
a particular branch of the government out of business.
Yeah, they don't want to go too far into the financial fiscal year before they do this, because that means reconciliation of books. And that's what they're trying to avoid.
Right.
It's a lot of work. So
okay, I appreciate it. I'll do my research and get back to you, Jim.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Audrey, there you are. Good morning. Audrey, take yourself off mute. Audrey.
Star 6.
Yeah, well, she's on a calling from a computer, and I don't know how to do it from the computer.
I don't have any clue.
Yeah, okay, well, Audrey, if you figure out how to come back. In the meantime, we'll take the next call. So I'm guessing this is Norma. How are you this morning?
No, this is Jerry.
No, it's Jerry. Oh, I'm sorry. I got the wrong person. Sorry. Go ahead.
Well, we put this money in our business trust. And how does the IRS look at this business trust versus a regular trust?
Let me see if I can figure out how to address this. A standard trust is something that just holds something for another person. A business trust is an entity that can do commerce and expand itself and just the opposite, expand and then contract itself from time to time financially without any implications. I run my business through a business trust. I mean, I've run a lot of money through it. I have checks. I have debit cards. If they're looking at a stand like a revocable trust or one of these asset planning trusts, it's just money in hold. And those are basically revocable. And people keep saying, well, you can't put money in an irrevocable trust after it's notarized. Well, yeah, you can. It is a business trust. It's designed for business. It's just when you start the trust, you have your first tranche of money that you put into it to get everything started. So you don't
pay taxes on that original money that goes into the business trust.
As it stands right now, that is correct. Let me interject
something here for a moment. The initial creation of a trust, whether you're putting your bicycle collection into it or you're putting all these assets into it, the initial creation of the trust is not a taxable event. It's an exchange. Jim, I think what you were referring to is, will this RV be taxable? Is that right?
Yeah, I don't think the RV will be taxable, but I do. If you earn money with the trust, you have to pay taxes.
Yes.
Even though it's still in the trust, you have to pay taxes on what you earn in the trust.
Only the earnings.
Correct.
Just the earnings, not the initial investment.
Okay.
If I understand the code. So you have to file a 1041.
Yeah.
And then they will tax it accordingly.
Yeah. Well, Carol, you know the kind of money I think I'm talking about. We're going to get a sum of money. Should we, in that business trust, indicate that we're going to get that sum of money ahead of time, or when it comes in, put it in the business trust at that time and it still is a non-taxable event?
If we, depending on how we write the exchange, I just can't think of the word I want right now, but if it's already in the trust, depending on how we write it, it should go into the trust as a non-tax, because then it's just a conversion from what it was when it went into and what it is now. So it should not be taxable.
Okay. All right.
Now, if you have a situation where you're going to have three or four, which I just worked on with a client, they had three or four, injections of cash from three or four different programs. It won't be simultaneous. So I simply wrote in there, I don't even have it in front of me, but I can pull it up. I'll pull it up as we talk. I simply wrote one thing on Schedule A that just allows it. And then I offered to do a resolution, thought it through, and thought, I really don't need to do the resolution the way it's set up. So I'm trying to pull that right now as we speak, and I got it coming up just a second. There it is. I got to remember which one it was. We just worked on it. There it is. I think this is the one. So, Carol, keep talking to the young man here, and I'll see if I can find that, and we'll bring that up.
Okay. So, Jim is looking for what he is suggesting and what I just mentioned. It all depends how we write up the initial investment. Recurring payments from so-and-so or something to that effect, that you are expecting recurring payments and it's all going into the trust, and as such, it's written that way, it should not be a taxable event. And that's what we try to do. And obviously with the 99% of the people on this call are just concerned about currency. The currency is going to go in as it is right now. And face it, guys, right now it's wallpaper. But once it exchanges, that's where the money is going to come. And going into the trust is kind of a taxable event. And from what Jim and I have heard, many others have heard and repeated, the actual event itself should not be taxable. There may be a 2% treasury fee that I understand is taken off top that we won't see at all. That's not even going to be mentioned. It will already be taxed. We won't have to do anything about it. Final yet, Jim?
Yep, I did, finally.
Okay.
This old brain does work occasionally, a little bit. Okay, under Schedule A, it says business and or personal property, $100 and other cash deposits. Miscellaneous foreign currency, including but not limited to, in this case it was Iraqi dinar and Zimbabwe banknotes. Then I put, and other assets, cash or funds, from other funding events later in the year of 2021. So in Schedule A, it says the way I've set it up, you've got the full year to receive those before it becomes a taxable event. Now, the IRS may not agree with that, but I think there's case law that would back that up, because if you note in there in advance that it will be a series of fundings, it's still within the calendar year, there should be no issues. So
that's what
I did. I did the research this week, came up with that. I looked at IRC, Internal Revenue Code, and found a couple things that led me that way. It was Section, I think, 83A and Section 66 is what I looked at. So, and 116. And so I think this is as correct as we can be with a trust. And besides, folks, this is private. This is private.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they won't know about it unless you tell them. And if they get the court all this information for the bank, well, then you have to do some explaining. But as long as you got a piece of paper that shows that this was written in a specific manner, allowing for the full year, I don't think there's a whole lot they can argue with. At least I'm hoping.
Yeah.
Again, it is the IRS. You know, they have a tendency to want to argue a lot.
And according to them, they're always right, but we know better.
That's right. We know better. So that's kind of how I've structured this one, and I feel very confident that it's going to be correct.
Okay. And, appreciate your answers.
All right.
All right. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you very much.
Jimmy, you're going to add something there?
Yeah.
No, I was just asking if you had any other question about what I just said.
Okay.
Thanks, Jerry.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Linda, you're next. Linda, take yourself off mute. Star 6.
Sorry.
There you are.
Yes. Are the names of the trustees in public domain? Can anybody find out those names if they want to?
It's not recorded anywhere.
No, you're not recorded anywhere. The bank can't give out that information unless they have a court order. And if they give it out without a court order, they have a hell of a lawsuit pending against them.
Okay.
They're probably not that stupid. So
yeah.
I can't think of any place where it would come up.
Okay.
The only place your name showed up was when the EIN was acquired. That's only the IRS. So I can't figure out how they could find out who you are.
Well, there was something. I do have my trust documents that you sent. They're not notarized yet. But somewhere in there it said that the trustees could be sued. Is that correct? I thought the reason we had a trust was to keep from being sued, but can they sue the trustees personally, or did I misread something?
I think you misread it. Of course, now anybody can be sued for anything in this world. You know how that goes.
Yeah.
And then it's got to be taken to court to figure out if the lawsuit is even valid. The trustee is not personally liable for asset it does not own. You're simply the guardian. You're a hired gun. That's all you are. Now, if they want to sue, they got to sue the trust. Now, you represent the trust, possibly with an attorney in the future, if that ever came up. I don't see it happening. But you're simply a guardian. You're a hired gun. You're paid a salary to administer this. So, but again, anybody can be sued. Doesn't mean they'll win, but anybody can be sued. And any attorney that looks at this and realizes this is a irrevocable trust, they're going to walk away from it. They're not going to come after you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Next question. Is the trust in force if the successor trustees have not signed on page 18, at least my documents on page 18, because one of my successor trustees is out of state. So does that keep everything on hold until he signs it or not?
No, but it puts you in a very bad position. And let me explain that, because I have a personal experience of that. When my closest friend, really, at that time, and business associate for 30-some-odd years, we created some new trusts, and he transferred all the assets of these new trusts. We were doing some interesting estate planning for him. And within a week of that, he had not got it signed and he died. So he didn't even have his trust activated. And the older trust, you know, they were there, but the successor trustee that he had was not alive. So everything went in limbo. I've had to work very hard to get everything over to the family. And it takes a lot of work, a lot of time. So what happens here is if you don't have successor trustee and something happens to you, your whole thing goes to court.
Okay.
And it's a real mess.
I have two successor trustees listed, and one lives next door. So should I have the one that's out of state, should I just have his name removed and then later add him when he's here or when I have time to mail it to him to get that page to him to get it notarized? Or would that be better just to remove him, or would it be okay just to have one of them signed? So at least I'll
just have one of them signed. Just have one signed. But since the trust is written where you have a successor trustees will create the new board of trustees, even without his signature, the other successor trustee, which is the new trustee, can assign him to be a trustee.
Okay.
The trust is built to handle the issue.
Yeah, she would do that. She knows that's who I would want.
Right.
Okay. I'd like for you to discuss trust office. Explain all about the trust office. And I've also heard of a family office, I think, in conjunction with people having a lot of money. So,
Linda, I know you're referring to the earlier call with Dom.
Yeah.
He did say trust office. And in my opinion, he's talking about a family office, which is a group of all the professionals that you have chosen can help you out with all those issues. Would you agree, Jim?
Why is it called a family office if it's people you don't even know? Or they're not.
That's what the guy named it. I don't know. Jim, you have any comment on that?
Yeah, it's actually not a family office. I'm trying to remember the term they use that I just heard when I was talking to Abbott Downing. They don't call it a family office. They call it something else now. It was a new term to me, and I should have wrote it down. I didn't. Thinking that I'd remember that, which was stupid on my part.
We're all there, Jim. We're all there.
Yes.
Now, I've got 2 feet, one's hanging over the slippery slope, and the other one's standing on pudding or something. I don't know. I'm slipping down. But they don't use the term family office anymore, and I don't know what it's called. I'll try to look that up, and we'll get that out on the website. And, folks, I'm way behind in building the website. I'm way behind in getting the spreadsheets done. I won't bore you with all the details, but my last 10 days or 12 days have been really difficult. And I've got personal issues that I'm trying to handle. They're not severe, but they're sure time-consuming. So I'm really behind the eight ball, and everything should be squared away. I'm going to stay home the whole weekend because it's raining. Raining in Oregon? How about that? Catch up on all my little details. But I will get that stuff done. I promised people the spreadsheet. I start on it. I never got it done. I'll get that done this afternoon.
But some kind of office like this is something you need to set up right away after you get your funds. And do you have any guidance on the kind of people or where to go to pick those people? He did give a couple of recommendations, I think, if he was the Ernst & Young. And
He mentioned several, yeah.
Yeah. I remember that now. Okay. Well, I'm going to go off, and then I'm going to get back in line and give other people a chance to answer, to ask questions.
Okay.
All right.
Linda,
thank you.
Thanks, Linda. Uh-huh. All right. Let's see. When I was going to call on. Oh, there he is. Okay. Luis, welcome to the call. Luis, are you there? Star 6? Luis, unmute yourself, Luis. Okay. Next one, let's see. Who was next? Okay. Good morning, Raul. You're next.
Good morning, Carol and Jim.
Good morning.
I have a couple of questions here. I know that when the reset happens, both of you are going to take a two-week break. But I eventually want to buy a real estate trust. With respect to the initial motherload input of this amount of currency that's going to go in there, it's going to be a non-taxable event. Let's say I want to transfer money later on to my management trust. Is that also a non-taxable event?
It's by contract,
yes,
right? So it won't.
If we structure it the way I just talked about, I don't see any problem with it. You have to make a notation on future investments, I think would be fine. But remember, this is a business trust. It does commerce. You can bring money in and out. The issue is, where did you get it from? And since it's beyond the initial funding of the trust, it might be a taxable event if we don't structure it just right. And the only thing I can say right now is the Internal Revenue Service is possibly not going to be around much longer. We may not have to worry about that. I heard I was on a call 2 days ago, I think, with some friends that had a guest speaker, and it was a short one. And basically what they said is we're going to go back to what we should have had all along, which is an excise tax. And it'll be, I don't know what it's going to be. The number floats. Let's just say 10% for conversation. So anything you buy new, you pay 10% on. Anything you buy used, you pay no taxes. And if you think that through, that's the way it should have been, because the rich buy a lot of stuff, they pay the taxes. The poorer people try and buy used stuff because they don't, can't afford or don't want to spend the money for new stuff, and therefore they're not taxed. Mm-hmm. So it's supposed to be an equitable system. What we got now is not equitable at all. And so I think that the IRS has to go away. It is a foreign corporation. It is owned by people outside of the United States, and it is based outside of the United States. It's on an ongoing.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to go away. I don't think we have to worry about that.
Well, that was my next question, if the IRS was going to take a permanent vacation, and I guess you just answered it. So that would be encouraging. But after the RV, I'll wait the 2 weeks, and then I can call you guys to buy additional trusts. Is that correct?
You can go ahead and now, let me say this right now while everybody's on the phone. The moment the RV happens, I am going to shut down 3i Trust app for 48 hours. I'm going to do some updating on it and stuff that I can't do while it's live. And when I do that, it'll be a transparent issue. You won't know any difference when you get there. It'll look a little different, but not much. But I'm going to add a lot more stuff to it. And then, so if it's down, it'll say down scheduled maintenance. Down for scheduled maintenance is what the window will say. If you see that, folks, doesn't mean I'm not around. It means I'm working on it. And I don't know, people really don't know that I build all the websites. That's one of my hobbies. So everything you see that's dealing with Carol and I and her 501c3 site and a few other things, I've built all those. So I don't jobber this stuff out. I keep current on it. That's why I'm a little bit behind on keeping things current on that site. Then what happens after that time, you can just start adding, applications for trusts. And what we'll do, we'll go through the queue on the trust, on the date, and we'll start contacting people and put them in the queue accordingly. And then we have a team that we're training that will come on board and will help facilitate this. Now, let me assure everybody that the team will assemble the trust once either Carol or I go through it and make sure it's perfect. Well, I shouldn't say that because I screw up occasionally. But
we will proof all the applications, that's for sure.
Yeah, and we'll approve the documents before they're sent out. So we should not have a lack of quality, and we should be able to get them out fairly rapidly once we get back working. We have to take the 2 weeks off. We've got to do everything everybody else is doing. We've got to go get our affairs structured. We've got to buy those assets that we need You know, and basically, we have to hurry and get them before somebody else gets them. You know, mm-hmm. specific house, specific boat, specific airplane, specific this, specific that. That's what we need to do. We've got to get all that stuff
done. Yeah.
And,
well.
Yeah, but we'll be able to get it done quickly.
Okay. And I'm glad a certain airplane went to a certain location to drop off a certain person. I appreciate that comment. So.
Yeah.
Okay, Jim and Carol, thank you so much. And I'm done here. Sorry.
Yeah, thanks,
have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, let's try Luis again. Are you
Hello?
There this
Can
time,
you
Luis?
Now?
There you are.
Okay. I have to call differently. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Carol, Jim, thanks for receiving me. I have a couple of questions. What could be the best way to fund an entity trust after RV without having the mother trust name involved at the certificates, etc., and without doing any loans? This entity will be a gift to a relative, probably unknown heirs' use.
I don't see that being an issue. If you're going to take money and, you know, you're going to take this money from the mother lode trust to give it to somebody?
Yeah, the thing is that I don't want the trust, I mean, the mother lode, sorry, the mother lode, mother lode trust name to be public. So I want to keep it private from anybody.
Okay, the best way to do that is to create a standard trust for them, move the money into the standard trust, you go open the account with your name, and you be the initial trustee. Once that's set up, you introduce them to the trust, you train them quickly with the trust. It's not a lot to learn, but you bring them up to speed on the trust, and then you make them a co-trustee, and then you resign as trustee. Then you take them to the bank. Well, first off, you take the bank first before you resign. And you go to the bank and say, okay, I want this person to be on the checking account, and then I want my name taken off. They'll do that. I've done that 3 or 4 times. And then once they're on the checking account, got control of the money, then you resign as trustee. Now they're the trustee. They're somewhat trained. And since they are the trustee, they can call us for additional help because it's one of our products. And then you're relieved of that. Now there's no taxes as it stands out because your mother lode trust funded their trust. And so in there it'll say ABC, we'll just call it mother lode trust, ABC mother lode trust. And then you as the trustee, so the creator would be ABC mother lode trust and you as the trustee being the signer for that. And that's the simplest way to do it. And it's the cleanest way to do it. And then we have an EI number for their bank account. You can get that for them, or you can use their name to get it. Doesn't matter. And then we just set it up. You transfer the funds. You do what I just said. They're now control the money. You're out of the picture, and nobody knows about it.
On the creation side, when I transfer the money from the mother lode, I transfer to myself, you're saying, and then I create the trust because...
Nope. Okay. Luis, you're really close here. Okay, so here's how this works. The mother lode trust has the money. It is the creator of the new trust. You're the trustee. You sign on behalf of the trust. You remember the trust is a fiction.
Yes,
it doesn't
yes,
have arms
yes,
and legs. Right. Yeah. Okay. All right. So then when that happens, your mother lode trust funds the new trust. So you move money from your checking at your mother lode trust account into that trust new account at the bank.
Okay.
That's
all
you have to do.
Yeah. In regards to the certificate will be on the name of me or the trust. I mean, or the mother lode trust.
The mother lode trust has you as a certificate holder. The new trust would have the mother lode trust as the initial certificate holder. And then once you decide you want to depart, then as you leave, you'll transfer those certificates on behalf of the mother lode trust to the new trustees.
Okay. In order to comply with something that you said on the last conference call, because this is a contract with the mother load, I have a contract with the mother load trust. What could I do in a minute or in a resolution to justify that I'm just giving away mother load trust funds to somebody else?
You don't have to justify it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a function of a business. So you're funding another entity, and then you, actually the mother load trust acquires certificates initially, and then once it's done, and then there is some type of a forgiveness and or a schedule set up with a minor amount of money owed to the mother load trust that can be forgiven. There's various ways to do that. And then once it's structured properly, they have control of the money. There's no damage to you, and it's pretty much quiet. Nobody knows what went on.
Okay, at that time, I will also have you or Carol nearby to formalize the details. Okay, thank you.
Oh, yeah. And we'll do the resolution. Louise, we'll do the resolutions, the minutes, and the contracts.
Yeah, everything to make them work together.
Okay. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Sandy, good morning. Or good afternoon.
Good morning. Thank you, number one. I think you know what that is. But number two, you're probably going to say, oh, no, she's here. She is again. But the lady was talking about having her successor trustee sign, and I don't have a page for my successor trustee to sign on. Mine does not say that. Mine's a minute number
two. Yeah, it should. Why don't you, yours is one of the older trusts from my predecessor. Why don't you make a copy of that page and send it to me?
Okay, will do. I knew you were going to tell me that. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Let's see. We got it was out of order here. Okay, McKinney, Texas. Eric, so 214. Hi.
It's Todd here. I'm Sandy's nephew, so I'm glad to be following up after her. And it's good to be here live with you guys, so appreciate you guys very much. Thanks. My question is focused on the cryptocurrency and tax advantages of the mother load trust in a management structured fashion where you borrow against your assets. Jim, can you spend some time talking about adding your cryptocurrency as an asset, not thinking in terms of it being a currency, but more like an asset that you borrow against and then pay back to avoid a tax consequence. And in turn, you would use your, you and Carol's management structures to create a trust that is also focused on cryptocurrency as an asset. And if you were to cash or exchange some of those assets for money, can that be set up so that it could be paid back over a period of time without causing a taxable event? As in terms of, like, say, your cryptocurrency when you make your exchange, or in other words, if we're going into a quantum financial system and later this month, let's say something does come down the pike and we're able to make an exchange for a digital wallet, can that digital wallet be designated as its own trust, similar to a vehicle trust or a house trust that falls in underneath one of the management arms, if you will, or, you know, the wing, where the cryptocurrency is protected as a asset, and then if at a certain period in the future, once you have that digital wallet and you need to go to the bank for some service issues, such as borrowing against that asset, could you see, Jim, that that would be a borrowed event versus a taxable consequence that would involve your cost basis on those cryptocurrencies? If it, say, you know, cryptocurrency was, you know, X amount of dollars that you had where you made your exchange, you'd have a cost basis on that that situation. And then at some time in the future, if, let's say, you borrowed against that that particular trust in a management fashion, could that be documented as a loan, is my question, and then paid back without causing a taxable event, being that for the majority of us, you know, we file each year, and this year is coming up May 17th. You know, for those that of us that are filing, can you see how you could borrow against your cryptocurrency wallet and then pay it back in the future without causing a taxable event, Jim?
Yes and no.
Is it something that I should follow up with you on a separate call?
No. I love it. I'm going to tell you how to do it. Okay, number one is I have crypto, so it's perfect timing for this conversation. And I'm getting ready to set up a trust. Actually, I have the trust set up. I'm one of them that I have right now. And I'm going to put the crypto, the account, and the crypto in the trust. The account, think this thing through. The account is somebody's place that you're monitoring and where your money's held temporarily until you get this new electronic device. So you want the account and the crypto value in the trust. Now, if you want to borrow that out and go do something with it and then pay it back, the only taxable event that I know of. Now, folks, I'm not a tax attorney. I just read the code a lot and look at it, and I use some common sense, which sometimes screws up the IRS. But the only thing you'd have to pay as far as taxes would be on the return of the money, the interest that you charged to borrow the money or to loan the money would be taxable. So let's say you have $1 million. You need to borrow that. So you borrow it out. You use proper collateral according to how the trust is written. And that's the details, and it's all in the trust. And, you know, the trust, remember, folks, it's only, what, 10 pages, 9 pages long? It's not hard to find and not hard to learn. And then you loan the money or you borrow the money from there, and then you have to sign a note to pay it back with interest. Now, the interest is income to that trust. That would be a source of tax revenue. Now, if you have 0.5% interest, it's going to be a very small amount, so it won't really make any difference. Now, on the upside of that, if the IRS goes away like a thing is going to go away, no taxes. So it's going to be very, very simple. Either way, it works well. It's really not going to be a big deal.
So in other words, if they came to you and said, you know, Mr. Thompson, you have this influx of capital on your servicing bank account, where did this money come from? And it appears it came from a cryptocurrency exchange. Then I could report back to them that that was a loan and it's being done, it's being taken care of in a payback fashion and just document it as an item on one of at the end of the trust?
Well, I'm glad you asked it that way because that brings up something very important. And I'll answer you with teaching the other people listening what we need to do. We need to be extremely good record keepers for each one of our trusts. You have to have very clean documents. You have to have everything notarized. You have to have everything signed. You actually have to transfer money when you promise to transfer money on an interest. If you're paying interest in a payment, you have to do it. If you don't, you might invalidate your, I don't think you invalidate the trust, but you invalidate the contract, and then it may be all taxable. And then you have to go fight the battle. You don't want to do that. So I have my binders with my trust, and I have a little three-ring binder, you know, these wire tablets that you buy. They're college-ruled. You know what I'm talking about? Let's see. I've got one right here in front of me. Let me tell you what it says.
Regular line paper. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm using a college-ruled notebook, and it's 70 sheets, one subject, 10.5 by 8 inches. So I've got it all right here. And I keep these things. I have one in every one of my binders. And what I do is when I do something for the trust, I reach up, grab it off the shelf, pull it down, open it up, pull that three-ring out because I use the three-ring binder, pull it out, it's spiral-bound, and then I make my notes, date it, sign it. You have to sign each page. Sign it. Put it back in the binder, and then you go on to your next project. That's how you have to do this. You've got to keep really good, clean records. Because when you get into a situation where you got to do some splaining, as Ricky Ricardo would say, splaining. You have to do a lot of production of records to prove your point. And, you know, good paper keeps good friends, and good paper keeps good relations with the IRS. So that's how
Well, next question, Jim. When you're paying yourself back in terms of units, do you pay it back in terms of the X amount of dollars or the X number of cryptocurrency units? Which unit do you pay it back in terms of? Because of the fluctuation on the cryptocurrency market, if one unit is $10 when you make the loan, but then when you try to settle it out, is it better just to structure it so that it's a non-settleable loan that never gets paid back and it's a very low interest rate per year to just carry the note?
No, I would I'd write the note for the original amount, whatever you want to borrow.
That's the question. Which amount? The number of units in the cryptocurrency at the face value?
No.
Or
no.
The number of dollar units for that currency?
No. Here's how it works, in my opinion.
Okay.
When you borrow the money, you borrowed, I don't care if it's crypto, gold, silver, whatever. When you borrow it, you're using, at this point right now, Federal Reserve notes. So you only look at the amount of Federal Reserve notes that you borrowed. You put an interest rate on that, and you pay back that amount of money. It doesn't matter what happens to the crypto. You borrowed Federal Reserve notes. The crypto was the asset that you used. It's not.
So the answer is you're going to pay yourself back on the face value of the federal notes, X number of dollars.
Face value of the loan that you acquired.
Okay.
So if you borrow, let's use the real numbers here. Crypto's at 56,000, I think, per coin, Bitcoin. So if you borrowed a Bitcoin, $55,000, you use that as collateral.
That's your loan.
Yep, that's your loan. You borrowed the $55,000. You had the coin in the trust. You borrowed all of that out. So you used it for collateral. So it gave you the cash from the bank. So you got a loan from the bank in this case. I'm just using that as an example. When you pay it back to the bank, the full amount, they don't care what the asset is worth once you pay it back. They don't care. They just want their
interest. Can you carry that note just forever, though, and say, well, I'm going to pay it back one day, and I'm just going to pay the interest this year?
Nope. There has to be a deadline on the note. That doesn't mean it can't be renegotiated every 5 years and extended, but you have to have a beginning date and end date. Remember, a contract has to have certain elements. You have to have willing parties. You have to have dates. You have to have money. You have to have a guarantee, and you have to have signatures. There's more to it than that, but you get the general idea. So it's got to be a full-blown contract. You got to sign it properly. You got to have the collaterals stipulated. You have to have the terms stipulated. You also have to have, in case of default, some stipulation of what's going to happen. You don't want the court to stipulate that. You want to stipulate that in your contract.
Okay.
So, and then
I think I got it.
Done, yep. Pretty simple, really, when you think it through. It's the complication of trying to look at, okay, how is this asset going to be realized by the trust? It's an asset. It's just an asset. It could be a car. It could be a boat you're using for collateral. In this case, it's crypto. Doesn't
right.
matter what
and
the crypto goes.
There's a misnomer. They're calling it currency, but really you could treat it as property.
Yeah, exactly.
And borrow against it as a asset.
Yeah. Yes.
That's what you're saying.
Yes. That's very well said. You condensed everything for me. I appreciate that. Thank you. I'll write that down. It is an asset. It doesn't matter what the asset is. You're borrowing against the asset. And if it could be $1 million, you borrow $1 million or 50,000. In this case, using crypto, 56,000. You got a full face amount, which I doubt they'd give it to you, but let's just use 50. So you borrowed 50 using the crypto for collateral. You got it from the bank. You're going to pay the money back. Now, you can do this internally. You could be the bank. Your mother could, trust could be the bank. Doesn't have to be a brick-and-mortar bank. And you just do the contracts.
So are you seeing, in terms of the business trusts, a management fashion where you need a couple of trusts for your cryptocurrency assets, whether you have the Bitcoin that you mentioned or you have maybe the Ethereum? Maybe you have one trust for each of those assets?
You could. You actually could.
Okay.
And I have three trusts set up for my crypto.
Do you?
I have,
okay.
So I have, because I have multiple crypto. I have Bitcoin, Ethereum, and then I have a whole bunch of
the
little
Litecoin.
Bitty ones. Yep. I have a whole bunch of little ones that go into the third trust. They don't really produce much. But once one starts producing a lot, I'll create a fourth trust. I'll move that one into it, and I'll use that third trust, since we're talking about the fourth, I'll use that third trust to be the originator, or excuse me, the creator of the fourth trust, and move that asset into that trust, that one Bitcoin or a crypto coin into that trust, and then, again, exchange the certificate of beneficial interest to the third trust. And then it can stay that way forever if you want. It doesn't really matter. It's an internal project. And that's
are there any forms that we can print off on the website, being for customers already? Because I have a couple of trusts in my name already. Is there any help that you have? Do you foresee adding some things onto the website, Jim, or what?
I foresee adding a lot on the website, especially because of crypto. I'm just getting involved in it, learning about it. So I'm going to add quite a bit. And that can be used for any asset once I get it done. There is a lot on there about assets now. But I'm going to get serious about getting a lot of information. I have a lot of information. I just haven't had the opportunity to put it on the website. And I'm going to do it. I've probably got 5 or 6 days worth of work just bringing the website current with what Carol and I have been talking about doing. But we're going to do it.
Okay. Well, you've answered a lot of stuff in between the lines that was on my mind. I might try to circle back with you. I've got your phone number. I might try to get with you again. I've got several of the trusts that I've purchased from the colleagues of the past. But, yeah, I appreciate you guys live today. I really do.
All right, guys. Glad you're here. Thanks very much, Misa. What you brought up was a very important and timely subject. It's a real blessing to us. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. The comfort level with those digital wallets is something to be not taken lightly. I mean, it takes corporations years to pull the trigger on things, and to have a digital wallet and to be the sole owner of the passwords, that takes time. Because when you push the button
now
on stuff and you don't have the right password, or you've forgotten your password, you're locked out, you know.
Yeah, you lose your ass entirely. We've got a client right now that cannot find the password, and it's $46,000 or something like that. I don't know. Remember what the number was. And we don't know what we're going to do. We looked at it, and it's nothing we can do at this point. But, yeah, that's very important. Of course, there's a lot of courses.
Well, there's two sides of the token. You know, you've got one side where if you don't have your password, you're locked out. But if you do have your password, they're yours for the keeping. But if somebody else is keeping it and they've got the password, then really it's not yours, is it?
That's exactly right. That's why this system is changing to where you have your own physical digital wallet. I've seen one. It's about the size of a thumb drive. Got some interesting blue and red lights on it when you put it in your computer. So, you know, the guy
I'll follow up with you after the call today. I have a few of them. We can talk about it. So, but we've got to stay on track with the trust, I know.
Yeah, I've got to leave right after the call also. So this weekend, I've got to finish up on a couple things, and I need to have some time to work on the website. So call me during the week, anytime between 9 and 6 for this coming week. I'll have my cell phone with me if I'm on one of my projects, which I'm trying to finish up.
Well, it's been nice talking with you openly. I appreciate it. I will do that, Jim.
Okay. You guys have a great – go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for
okay,
the call.
Okay, thanks, Jim. Thank you, Carol.
You're welcome. We've got about 20 minutes left, and we've got about half a dozen callers, so here we go.
All right.
Okay, Ken, how are you today?
Hi, Carol. It's actually Lacey Garrett using Ken's phone.
Oh, there you go. Hi, Lacey Garrett.
How are you guys? And
we're
I don't
good.
Necessarily have a question, and I know everybody on this call appreciates you and Jim. I just wanted to give Jim a huge, huge shout-out for helping me yesterday. He went above and beyond what I would have expected anyone in your guys' position to do for me. And he knows what I'm talking about, but I just wanted to publicly thank you and tell you I really do appreciate your work.
Wow, thank you. I have one quick question, just a yes or no. Did it show up?
Yes. No, all not right. yet. We're going to check today.
I'm telling you, that really
yeah. kind of where we're at.
Yeah.
Yes, but we do appreciate everything you've done, so thank you.
Okay, Lacey, call me later, regardless, because, folks, this is the only one I'll take today. When she calls, we got something in process. We're having some issues with one of the carriers getting certain products to certain places under certain contracts that they did not follow through on. We'll talk about it next week.
Okay, I'll call you, Jim. Thank you so much, though. Appreciate you guys.
Thank you, Lacey.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Cynthia, you're up.
Yeah. Hi. What a great call.
Hi. Thank you. What's on your mind?
I want to respond for information for Mark if he's still on. I have a daughter-in-law that's in banking. And when I started asking her about FDIC, she alerted me two things. Anything you have in a safety deposit box is not covered by that. And the government at any time can come into a bank, insist upon going through all of them without any of the customers knowing it. The other thing is that even though it's supposedly insured for $250,000 in the small print, it says that it will not come to you personally. They can wait, and they will wait, and it'll come out in increments of about $100,000, and it'll end up going to your children or grandchildren and not to you. So it's all a scam. It's not, you're not going to ever go in there. And if the whole banking system goes down, it eliminates the FDIC for all banks, and they don't have to give you anything. So I just wanted to, you know, and I confirmed that with a banker that I bank with here. Okay, like
wow,
you and we're packing now, getting ready to put our house on the market. We're going to Florida.
So my
concern is we're going to need to get a house relatively quickly to avoid capital gains. I mean, too quickly. It's like you have to make a decision to buy a house in 40 days. It's ridiculous. So, and we're going to need vehicles and furniture and just everything that, you know, we're going to need a substantial amount of this to do the transition and set ourselves up. So, Carol, you had answered a question for me, thank you, by email, saying that we would get a 2% debit card. And
that's
then
what I understand.
The rest of the funding at another appointment. My entire adult life, that's not true. The last 20 years here in New Hampshire, every certified public accountant I've ever talked to says do not use debit cards for anything because somebody gets hold of that and they can drain everything in your account. So that, I had a question about that.
And that's a good warning for everybody, and I agree. I totally agree. However, I don't think we have a choice in the matter. From what I have read, that's what we're going to be given at the end of our first RV appointment is a debit card that's worth 2% or whatever your holdings are. I don't think we have any choice over that. We may. I don't know.
Okay.
But I totally agree with your CPA.
Yeah. You know, because I don't like everybody following me around and knowing, you know, I don't want to be followed by the government. So I instituted a VPN. I used Virtual Shield and also ExpressVPN, and it changes my IPO address from New Hampshire. Typically, it's to New York or New Jersey. I heard somebody talking this week that our notification for our appointment, that they know where we are because of our IPO. You know, that's how they'll know how to contact us, through email or whatever. So that brought up the question of, okay, great. Does that mean I could miss getting something from them about our appointment? Or that?
Well, I don't know. I did ask somebody that question who has, let's say, access to people higher up than I have. So, and his comment was, I did not have a chance to ask about address versus zip codes, but I would bet you would be able to exchange anywhere. And I have to agree. I mean, your comment about IPOs and VPNs is very, very valid. And for instance, I'm currently in Florida. This is where I want to exchange. I don't want to exchange in Oklahoma, where my IP address is. I mean, it's the reason I'm in Florida, because I want to exchange here. So, I mean, I really think we're going to be fine just with the zip code. That's my personal opinion.
So how quickly do you think that the funds could be available where we'd have what we need to go to Florida to get going down there, to get a home, to get our vehicles, get everything set in place? I mean, is it going to be days, weeks, months? Do you have any idea?
I'm trying to remember exactly what I read. It was 2% up front, and then we supposedly have up to 15 days to make our second appointment to give them all of our banking parameters, et cetera. So it looks like 2 weeks.
Okay. So I've got my briefcase prepared and everything in it. I'm taking Jim's acknowledgement. I mean, I've really gotten good, accurate records of what I've got. At some point, I put my passport with all the materials, and now I can't find my passport. That's just me. I've set it down somewhere, and I haven't found it yet. But we have Ray's passport. So if Ray and I both go to the meeting together, that's my husband, with all our verification of our addresses and utility bills and everything they want, is just the one passport going to be sufficient?
There's no way to know.
See, so two IDs, right? Passport, driver's license, Costco card, anything with your picture on it.
Yeah, I have a copy of my passport, but I've been calling them about what do I do about this, and they are telling me if I don't find it, I have to report it as lost and start the process over, and right now it's a 4 to 6 week window before I would get a new passport. So then I thought, was panicking earlier, and then I went, well, Ray, we've got Ray's passport.
Yeah.
I got my old passport. I have my documentation of, you know, it going into the one I'm still going to believe I'm going to find it. You know, it's going to show up here because I'm in the middle of packing because we're going to Florida. So
okay. Let me jump in here real quick. Okay, we got to keep moving here, but let me just talk about two things real quick. Passports. Get the passport card. I have one. I got the passport, and I got the little card that's like a driver's license. Get the card. Put it in your wallet along with your driver's license. That's two pieces of ID they cannot argue with. That's number one. Number two, your 2% debit card. Have them move 2% to a second account, give you the debit card on the second account, not the primary account. Should solve the mystery.
Okay.
So that would be the two things.
So you set up the account with the trust in the bank, and you ask them to move the 2% to that.
To the next account, give you the debit card on that account, not your mother load account.
Okay.
So you only have 2%, you lose. That's the worst case scenario.
Now, I was listening to the other person regarding the gift thing. I definitely want to honor God and tithe to him. And I do have a charitable organization that is involved with the homeless that I'm involved in and I already contribute to. So I'm going to set up something for them in a charitable trust. And I understand I need to pull together something called a humanitarian template that just kind of briefly explains, you know, what they do and, you know, what the fruit of it is and why I want to support it. Any comments
that's
on
that? That's about all you need. Yeah, just grab that stuff, take it to the exchange. They may not use it the first time you're there, but on the second appointment, I think that's when it's going to come into play. It gives you, you're going to get information at the first appointment that you'll be able to use to get everything ready for the second appointment. Everybody's freaking out. Well, what do I need? What do I have to get? What do I have to put together? Nobody knows. We've never done this before. So I think that's why they're doing the two-appointment gig. They want to give you the information, give you 2 weeks to get ready for the second appointment, go in and see your wealth managers. You'll be able to pick a team, and away you go. So I think it'll be very, very simple.
Okay, that's good news.
All right. Okay.
All right. So, I'm going to – I may just email some other questions because I want other people to have a chance. Carol,
yeah.
I appreciate you all. Getting back to me. Thank you.
Right.
Thank you, Cynthia.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Blair, you're up next.
Hey, Carol. Hey, Jim. It's Blair from Texas. I'll get right to the point. I know you're short on time. I'm trying to figure out prior to the RV, what's the best way that I can give money to my kids? And I'm planning on taxes staying as they are. I know the IRS may go away. I hope it does, but Jim, you're a pilot. I'm a pilot. I don't plan on best-case scenarios. I plan on worst-case scenarios. So everything I see looks like it's going to be double-taxed unless I just give them currency prior to the RV. What do you guys think? Is there any way that the trust can help me in this regard?
Yeah, you can do that. In fact, I've given away a lot of currency as gifts, and I have a little notation that I give them. And if it's a large amount, then you should put it into a trust. If it's a smaller amount, then just give them the currency. What I have done is there's 4 or 5 that I wanted to give, like my brother. He's not participating, but I want him to have some money. So I set up a trust for him. And my motherlode trust funded his new trust. It's not a motherlode for him. It's just a standard trust. And then I have a bank account already opened up, and I'm on it. He's not. I put $100 in the bank account to get it open. And then when I get ready to give him the trust, I will go to the town that he's in here in Oregon. I will go with him to the bank. We'll have the documents done. And I will resign as trustee after I put him on the bank account. And then he's the trustee. I move the certificates over to him because he's a new trustee. He was my successor trustee. Now he's the new trustee. And then he has the cash control, and I don't have to worry about it because there was not a taxable event in funding that second trust. If you give them the money, it could be taxable to them. You aren't taxable to you, too, if you're not careful. So that's how I structured it.
Okay, that's good. That kind of leads into the next question is how later on with the trust, how do you just give money away? As a trustee, your fiduciary responsibility is to do things for the benefit of the trust entity itself. And how can you just give money out of the trust and say that's in the best interest of the entity? Maybe in the best interest of the recipient, but not necessarily of the trust itself.
If the trust is set up to do just that, then that's fine. So I have a trust that I've set up. Of course, I make them all the time. I have lots of them. I have a trust just set up for that, just to give money away. Yeah, it's going to hurt me a little bit financially. It's going to maybe a taxable event to me. I don't care. I'm going to actually carry around wads of cash, and I shouldn't say that. I'm going to carry around enough cash to where I can bless a few people, get them on their feet a little bit, and then work with them. There's a new homeless center being built here in Salem. They have these little bitty, look like oversized dog houses where you got two bunks in there and a little kitchenette. I'm serious. They got them all. They're building them here, and it's a great idea. Get a lot of people off the street. And I already made a small contribution. I'm going to make another contribution for one of my trusts to help that out. You can make the contributions. It's not a big deal. You can give money away anytime you want. It's not going to damage the trust. You just decide to do it. You're the trustee. You write a note or a resolution to change the basis of the trust by saying, after consideration of the events going on worldwide, this trust, the trustees have got together and decided to bless with cash gifts certain amounts to certain people. Now you've just changed the format of the trust. It's a resolution. You sign it. The board of trustees signs it. Everybody's happy. Then you go out with your cash. You start giving it away. It may be a little bit of a taxable event to the trust, but I don't think so.
Wow, that's great. So as far as just paying for college for my grandchildren, I can just write a resolution that's now a goal of the trust and just do it. Is that correct?
Yeah, pretty much. Yep. Remember, this is a private entity. It's a private transaction, and this exchange is supposed to be a private exchange. So there should not be any issues on this. Remember, we don't have to ask permission from the government. They work for us. We've been brainwashed to think, oh, well, the government said this, and you know, like this mask mandate. It's a mandate. It's not a law. I get so annoyed with these people. I'm in Oregon, and I'm on my way to Florida also. I can't stay here in the state any longer. I mean, I'm afraid that the stupidity I'm seeing might be contagious. I'm getting the hell out of here.
I saw you guys just passed they got a bill in your house to outlaw beef.
I know.
Gosh.
Outlaw livestock. Keep with Biden.
Yeah, the interesting thing about Oregon is there was over 200,000 people wanting to recall the governor, which is more than necessary. We never, ever seen anything happen. They gave all the information to the state. The state's still sitting on it over a year.
Mm.
Remember, this gal that's running our state, I should say running, she's ruining our state, is Jerry Brown's little sister. You know, we used to call him in California, he was Moonbeam Brown as the governor. The guy is out there, man.
Right. Yeah.
I've never done.
Right.
So one last question like that.
You only got a few minutes left, guys, okay?
Oh, I'll go. Thanks, Carol. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you. Yeah. Hey, Jim, we got one more. We've got one that's a repeat and one that came on late, but we will take the one that's been waiting the longest. And that would be Ginger.
Good morning. I just would like to ask a question for the beginners, but I really just want to say to continue gratitude to Carol and her past husband's knowledge and for the work legally to create the depths of these trusts, and constant kudos to Jim for his wisdom. For those that are beginners, I wish I had heard this information before, that with the trust comes how to operate and use the contract trust organization and the procedures guide. And Jim has reiterated this, of course, in the website. And for people that are beginners, a lot of this often sounds really overwhelming to all the people that are experienced and, you know, full of wealth and knowledge. But, you know, it's kind of like when you go buy a car and you don't read that car manual, yeah, you go by your tabs because you have to. But then when you read the car manual as you need it, you begin to learn. But if you will read this wonderful procedure guide that Carol has given, you will learn the lingo, and if you get your trust, you will see the steps. And I just really encourage people, because being some of their biggest fans, when I try to explain to others why they need a will and what it does, you know, people can get lost easily because people – Carol and Jim have been doing this for years. My question today is if you guys would explain in the simplicity form, once you have your trust, how to fund it and how to transfer.
Well, you're funding it initially on the creation of it. You're funding it with the currency. Or are you talking about just anybody?
Any money. I realize there's different trusts, right? Real estate trust is different than, you know, the motherlode trust. But I think a lot of people get really confused in that, and would love you guys sharing that simplicity of it.
Well, Jimmy, you want to expound on that a little bit?
Yeah, not for just a minute or two. Your initial investment is when you just fund the trust and whatever assets you put in, the $100 other consideration, and your currency. Doesn't matter what the future value of the currency is. That's how you fund it. Now, if you want to add more to it, you can do that. Remember, it is a business trust. If you want to take money out and spend it for business purposes, it is a business trust. It's not that difficult. I run my main bank account is a business trust. I run money in and out of that every week, and I know, you know, don't worry about it. I've been with Wells Fargo for 25 years, and I've had this trust now for 11 years with them, and it's a business trust. I just run money in and out as I need it.
As an indicator, it's a business trust.
Yep. Everybody tries to think, well, it's a trust. You can't do that. No. This is a business trust. We don't use the word business because then the bank's got, you need to go register here with this state and this agency. No, you don't.
Yeah. No, we don't.
No, you don't. No. The only place you have to worry about it is in the great state of Nevada. And that was said with tongue in cheek.
Yes. So
does that help?
Does that sort of answer your question, Ginger?
Yeah, I understand it, but I always just love beginners to really hear the reminder of the simplicity of it. Thank you, guys. Appreciate
it. Yeah, it is simple. Yeah. That's the problem. It's too simple. People looking for something more difficult.
They want more, yeah.
Yep. Sorry,
they want more than nine pages. Okay, well, Ginger, I'm going to let you go, and I'm sorry for these last two callers. As I said, one is a repeat call, and one came in late. If either one of you have any questions, please contact either Jim or myself. And, Jim, you want to give your contact information?
Sure. I'm in Salem, Oregon, temporarily, soon to be in Florida. Can't wait to get out of here, but my phone number is 503-583. What the heck is my number?
583-6791.
Yeah. I get those senior moments every once in a while when I'm not prepared. Yeah. So let me also just get out. You know, it's 503-583-6791 or 866-341-6907. Again, I'm in Salem, Oregon. I work 9 to 6 Pacific time, Monday through Friday. I allow calls once in a while on the weekend. If it's an urgent situation, I'll take the call. And I always respond to questions by email as fast as I can. So,
okay.
Carol?
Thank you, Jim. And all of you, thank you so much for your time and attention and the great questions. And Jim and I have learned over the past several years that opening up the Q&A helps so many people. So we're very, very grateful for your questions. Again, my name is Carol Worlius. My number is 877-333-5018 or 425-820-8090. I am currently in Florida, which is Eastern Time, and I'm available between 10 and 6. Best way to reach me is by email, info@indicatorinformation.com. Have a happy and safe weekend, everybody, and go RP. We're ready. Bye now.